when coast to coast isn't only defined by baseline to baseline. We go around the country to give you the biggest news from the people who are there. It's the Full Court Press. And now, the man running the point, Jason Anderson.
All right, hanging out on Monday in the zone, Jason Anderson with you, leading up until 6 o'clock. Use radio code, promo code RadioXL. Radio code, too. RadioXL promo code at Papa John's for a two-topping extra-large pizza. It's just $14, and you get a two-liter as well. That is RadioXL two-topping extra-large pizza and a two-liter for just $14. Go to PapaJohns.com or the Papa John's app. Next week, we'll be live from Churchill Downs, the backside with Drew Diener, front side with Bobby V and the Zone and Mark Ennis and Locke and Andy, all sides. We'll see where they end up, doing their show from. That is all leading into the Oaks and then the Derby. And, we are your home for the Kentucky Derby. We are the exclusive home for the Triple Crown. All of that coverage is going to be right here on ESPN 680, 105.7 and 93.9 The Ville. Also, you're home for 16 hours of coverage on a daily basis. 16 hours of live programming each and every day. And as the NBA playoffs are, I guess, going on, but not really exciting until we get to the semis. Semis of the conference. And then the conference finals. And then the NBA finals. But until we get to that part, NBA not really all that much really interesting, but the NFL draft coming up on Thursday night. That will be on 93.9 The Ville Thursday and Friday night, the NFL draft. That is presented on ESPN Louisville by Dave & Buster's Baptist Health Sports Medicine and First Financial Bank. So all of the stuff you need, all the stuff you're looking for, it's going to be right here on ESPN Louisville, 680, 105.7 and 93.9 The Ville. Again, we're going to talk with Jarrett Sutton coming up at 5 o'clock. We will get his thoughts on the players that have declared for the NBA draft before some of the invites go out to the combine. And I think about now is when some of the invites start going out. Like, I don't think it's one huge list that is released by the NBA. Like, it is typically like Jeff Goodman, not Gordon, releasing, names and like, oh, Zion Williamson has received an invite to the NBA draft. Like, I don't think you have to report that, right? Are you required as a reporter if you hear, like, your source tells you that, hey, Zion Williamson got an invite to the NBA draft? I feel like I want to tweet that right now and report that. In fact, I am reporting that. I got a text right here from one of my sources, and then I went and got another source to weigh in. This is double sourced. Zion has received a invite combine. Now, he is still mulling if he is going to go to the NBA combine and work out. But I can report, I'm reporting right now, that Zion has received an invite to the NBA combine. You heard it here first, folks. You heard it here first. So if you see anybody that reports that Zion got an invite, remember, it's right here. Make sure they credit me and me only. Before we start our full court press, a couple of texts that came in that I just want to get out there as it relates to what we were just talking about there at the end. Texas says, this isn't a rebuild in Conference USA or Big East. Four wins would be pretty good. I agree. Texas says, if Louisville goes 6-6, I might start calling him Satterfield Lombardi. He would deserve Coach of the Year. I think if they go 6-6 and go to a bowl game, I think there's a chance he could be ACC. He would be in the mix for ACC Coach of the Year. More than likely, it goes to Dabo. Or if there's a team that really surprises that it's like, oh, they are picked to finish fourth and they finish second, in their division, then that would be a team that would be thought of or put into the mix, or that coach would be put in the mix for ACC Coach of the Year. But look, the way this team looked last year, only 1 year of offseason to try to, fix some things. Not a huge recruiting class of a lot of help coming in. The coach talking about how, they have to stay healthy like everybody does, but they don't have any depth, that they're going to rely on walk-ons, and that it's going to take a couple of years to get to the point of where he wants his team and the roster and what he wants that to look like. And they're going to have to do that with high school kids, which won't be on campus in the recruiting class until 2020. That ain't this recruiting class for 2019. That's going to start in 2020 when the, quote, foundation of Louisville football with Scott Satterfield as head coach really gets rolling. Texas says what he's telling you is he's going to be going through the same thing that Mark Stoops went through when he got here. And I'm assuming that's a UK fan when he got to UK, that Satterfield going through the same thing. I don't disagree at all. And you had that recruiting that fell off with, or at least the view of what those players were going to do to impact that with Joker. Remember, Joker two wins the next year, Mark Stoops two wins. And it's like, well, you know, Stoops, same record as Joker. Stoops' first 3 years, same record as Joker's last three years, same record. Except one took over a team that had been to bowl game and bowl game and bowl game and bowl game. The other took over a team that was 2-10 and got beat down by Vanderbilt. So if Satterfield's record is the same, like the first couple of years, their record is Bobby's. He won 10 wins first 2 years, Bobby's last 2 years, 10 wins. Right. He's taken over a team that's an absolute dumpster fire right now. Hey, let's start a full court press on this Monday edition. It's ESPN 680 105.7. And we head to New York City. We find our man Dan Schwartzman with NBC. Dan, how are you, sir?
I'm great. Listen, for this interview, I want you to do the entire interview with that voice you were just doing.
Okay. I will only. We'll see. What do you think about
exactly that?
When's the last time, Dan? Sometimes you just got to run into a rest locker room. Just let them know that I'm pissed. Not happy.
I need a translation, but still, I like it.
When's the last time you ran into a locker room that were filled with refs to let them know that you're mad and I'm not going to take it anymore?
Well, you know, I've never pulled a Sean Marks, and I don't intend to ever pull a Sean Marks.
Seems like it's frowned upon.
Yeah, but he's right, though. I mean, this is one of the worst officiated series I've ever seen, and for the NBA to have to come out today and admit, oh, yeah, by the way, there was a foul on Allen, and it should have been called. And remember, it was 1-10-1 away at that point. He gets the foul called. He probably, you know, may hit two shots, whatever it is, and it's a whole different ballgame. Instead, they lose a game 1-12 and away. I understand the anger. Like, he can't do it, but I understand the anger.
So he's suspended one game and docked one game's pay. Are GMs paid on a game-by-game basis? Like, is that just salary he's docked?
I kind of thought the same thing. I guess they take his couple of million bucks and they divide it by 82, and that's it, I guess. I don't know.
Can they move past the issue with the officials and get this series back and close, or is this one of those to where you look back and say, what could have been?
I don't think, as much as the officiating's been horrendous, the Sixers are a better team.
Yeah.
Brooklyn has done a great job this year. That team has accomplished more this year than I think we all thought. And they have some real building block pieces. Their guard play is really good, right? They have three solid guards, to say the least. The future is bright. You know, D'Angelo Russell has been an absolute find after he's been, you know, popped off that Lakers scrap heap because Magic was an idiot. But the reality is, I think the Nets have accomplished more than expected. Sixers are a better team. Brooklyn has played them well. And this is the type of series you look back next year when the Nets are even better and you say, they learned from that series. But they're just not a better team. And really, they've kept it close. And I think they've actually done a good job, but this one's over.
Yeah, I'm with you on that one. And maybe in the offseason, this one builds and you go, okay, they build up that one. Sort of like what could be for the Clippers. If the Clippers aren't going to win the series against the Warriors, but they got one and you see that they got some exciting players and pieces, and maybe it helps going into the offseason just by simply playing the way they did. Now, obviously, different series, and Nets could have this thing at 2-2 right now, but that is not what it sits at right now. The Jets are sitting at number three with their draft position. One, do you expect them to stay there? And if they do, is it Josh Allen, or what other spots are they looking at?
I don't expect the Jets to stay at three, and that's because to make the move up last year, which was a great move, they had to trade up to get Sam Darnold, and they gave up their first, and they gave up three second-round picks, two last year, and their second-round pick this year. The Jets need depth. They need more talent. They need more picks. And if the Jets get an offer where they don't have to move down too far in round one, but then they can accumulate potentially a second rounder this year, maybe even pick up a first next year, depending on how hot and heavy people are for the Dwayne Haskins of the world, I think the Jets certainly would move. But let's go under the premise the Jets don't move. And let's go into the premise Kyler Murray, Jason goes one, and Nick Bosa goes two. The Jets have a real dilemma here, okay? do you go with Quinton Williams, who I think is the better player, or do you go with, you know, with Allen, who I think is more of a needed edge rusher? And I've had this discussion with friends. I host a show with Rodney Harrison. We've had this discussion. The Jets need an edge rusher, but Quinton Williams can be an absolute monster in the middle. How do you get Tom Brady? The guys off the edges, for some reason, always seem to run past him, right? He's got this great ability to step up. I think for the Jets, if Quinton Williams is there at three, as he should be, they don't trade the pick. As much as Allen kind of, you know, gives them a need they haven't had since John Abraham back in 2005 as an edge rusher, they need to have that dominant guy. You put Quinton Williams next to Leonard Williams, no relation, by the way. I think that's the move the Jets should make.
Yeah, it's a good point because Brady is so good at sitting in the pocket and stepping up in the pocket when he gets the pressure from the outside edge rushers. If you don't have the push in the middle, odds are Josh Allen is going to pressure Brady but then go by him when he steps up in the pocket if you don't have that pressure from the middle. It's a good point.
Right.
What do you think they would do then with new coaching staff and maybe new philosophy? Do you think they go, edge rusher, we're looking at cornerbacks, we're looking at defensive ends that can pressure the quarterback, and we're looking at quarterbacks? Like, that's the league now in the way that people are playing and scoring. Like, those are the needs, and slot corner as well. So do you think they go edge rusher, or is this a franchise that would look at it and say, longer term, who's the more dominant potential player, as opposed to this is the guy that we have a specific need for?
You know, Mike Maccagnan's always been a draft not based on need but best available talent, right? He did that with Jamal Adams 2 years ago. He did that with Leonard Williams 3 years ago, or 4 years ago at this point, I guess. It makes sense. Greg Williams is the DC, and he is as great a DC as you're going to find there. And I think he does have a lot of influence and power in Adam Gase's coaching staff. I think Greg Williams looks at a Quinton Williams and says, this guy's revolutionary, right? This guy's a game changer. I think he looks at Josh Allen and says, yeah, he's a good edge rusher, right? Maybe a one-trick pony, but he's an edge rusher. And I think he goes, I can do more with Quinton Williams' talent to be a disruptive defense. And I think what he looks at is, I can free up linebackers because of a Quinton Williams. I can free up Jamal Adams and Marcus May at safety to do more because of Quinton Williams up the middle. I think in the end, they go with who's the more talented player. And with that philosophy and Greg Williams' influence, I think they go Quinton Williams if they keep that pick.
If they keep the pick and Quinton Williams goes number two, then is it definitely they're just going Bosa?
Yeah, at that point, you still go best player available. And at that point, it would be Nick Bosa. See, yeah. Nick Bosa is the best player on defense in this draft, maybe the best player in the entire draft. If he's gone and you have to choose between Allen and Williams, at that point, they could use one or the other. You go with best player, and the best player would be Quinton Williams.
All right, the Giants have two first-round draft picks. Do they use them both in those spots? Do they trade down and pick up other picks? Do they package them together and go get or if Kyler Murray is even available at number one, if the Cardinals aren't going to, select him, or are they in the mix for not a Josh Allen, but a
Josh Rosen.
Thank you, Josh Rosen. Something like that. Like, are they in the mix? What are they looking at and looking to do with those two first-round draft picks?
The Giants' defense isn't very good. And if you look at Dave Gettleman's history with Carolina, don't forget the year that he drafted star Lutulelei and he drafted Keywon Short. Remember that?
Yeah, absolutely.
And people said, why are you drafting two defensive tackles? Well, it worked. So he's the best available guy. Look, for some reason, he thinks Eli Manning still has something left. I don't understand it. No one in New York does. No one believes it. I don't believe they take a quarterback at 6 or 17. I think that if the Arizona Cardinals are willing to take pick 37 for Josh Rosen, which I don't believe they would be, maybe the Giants would make that move. I think the Giants go defense with pick number 6, pick number 17. Expect them to get an edge rusher. Remember, they traded Olivier Vernon in that Odell Beckham Jr. draft, and I think they go with a big horse in the middle as well, and they get two big bodies on that defensive line. Maybe not the sexy picks, but the necessary picks in today's NFL.
Well, it's a strategy as how the older Manning ended up winning his second Super Bowl. Just really good defense and sort of find your way to the end zone from time to time. You know, it'll work for Eli, too. Why not? Dan Schwartzman, NBC there in New York. Dan, as always, great stuff, man. Very much appreciate the time, brother.
Anytime, Jason. Always fun.
We do head to the Bay Area. We find our man Roxy Bernstein, 95.7 The Game, the Pac-12 Network and ESPN Radio as well. Roxy, how are you, sir?
Jason, doing great, man. Doing well.
Is the city getting ready for the draft on Thursday? Is it game 5 on Wednesday? Or is it game 7 in the Stanley Cup?
Well, the Warriors clearly dominate the news out here, especially right now. I don't know if there's much anticipation necessarily toward a game 5 and closing out the Clippers, just because it's kind of expected.
Yeah.
And a lot of people are already looking ahead to the Rockets. And Houston hasn't closed out that series just yet against Utah. But that's certainly where most of the attention is, and with the baseball team struggling a little bit, especially the Giants. But there is excitement for the draft because, let's face it, both teams are picking in the top five, and certainly drama never ends around the silver and black, considering the story that came out with John Gruden kicking all the scouts and Mike Mayock getting him out of the building because they don't trust him.
That's right.
That bodes well heading into the draft. And there's some buzz around Game 7. I think the Sharks kind of like caught most of the people off guard here in the Bay Area by coming back in that series with Vegas and forcing a Game 7 and a dramatic double overtime win last night. So there's never a dull moment, Jason, here in the Bay Area, that's for sure.
Have you ever jumped in the ocean to break out of a rut or a slump before? You ever done that?
Not here, at least.
Okay.
It gets a little cold. I've jumped in the ocean in other places, but
right, yeah, that makes sense.
Clay is just Clay. You know, he does different things, and it's great. It's refreshing, almost the way he looks at the game and treats it. And when a day when Steph Curry struggled yesterday and wasn't shooting the ball well, the Warriors figured it out, and I think they're still angry and upset the way they ticked off the way they lost Game 2, considering they blew a 31-point lead.
Yeah.
And this series should be wrapped up by now, but it's not. They got to play one more game. They got to finish off the Clippers on Wednesday, and they got to play well, but maybe it sparked this team a little bit, and I think they learned a lesson in terms of you can't take anything for granted, especially in the playoffs. And I think the Warriors kind of tried to put it in cruise control, and they were outscored 72-37 during the final 19 minutes of that game, which is unheard of.
Yeah, no doubt. And the Rockets, you know, could wrap up their series tonight and sweep, and then we know that the Warriors won't play until Wednesday. And if they don't win, then you're talking about going to a Game 6, which would be crazy to think about. Like, I don't know how much of advantage there would be for the Rockets if they wrap up tonight and they wait around and watch the, you know, Warriors play one more game. I would expect it only be one more game. How much is there? You mentioned that it's not really anticipation of Game 5. It's more, you know, talk about the Rockets. How much is the discussion around the Rockets and this being a second-round matchup as opposed to what many thought would be the Western Conference Finals?
It's just pretty much assumed if it's going to be a formality, right? That the Warriors are just going to finish it off, and they're going to win Wednesday night. Now, I got to imagine inside the locker room and Steve Kerr's team that they're not looking at it the way that everybody else can look at it outside that locker room, considering what happened in Game 2. And they'll be the first ones to give the Clippers credit for how hard they played. Look, we know who's the more talented team. It's obvious. And I don't think anybody would question that. Even Doc Rivers won't. But the way they played and the toughness that the Clippers have shown, I think it's very impressive. And you got to give them credit for that. But as long as the Warriors show up and play the 48 minutes, everything will be fine.
Mm-hmm.
And then they'll advance to Houston. But we can kind of look forward to that series. And considering the way the playoffs have gone the last couple of years and those matchups, and I know Houston's still bitter, feeling that they should have won last year in the Western Conference Finals, but we get it in the Western Conference Semis this year because the Rockets finishes the four seed.
Yep. Is there any chance that Cousins returns? Like, are people just and the team maybe just looking at it and saying that, you know, there is no Cousins the rest of the way?
It's very doubtful. I would be shocked if we saw DeMarcus Cousins again this season, just because of the nature of the injury, and you hear how long it could be. And look, the Warriors have moved on, and that's what's crazy is for a lot of teams, an injury like that would linger, and that'd be the conversation. They don't have DeMarcus Cousins. Not this team, because there's so much talent. It's an embarrassment of riches with Curry and Durant and Thompson and Green. And the way Andrew Bogut has stepped in, I think it has been a big lift for them. And what a shrewd signing by Bob Myers, the Warriors GM, to bring back Bogut. He looks physically as well as he has in a long time. And it's not like he was just hanging around. He was playing pro in Australia. But he's fit in seamlessly because he's been there before. He's such a well-liked figure and was when he was here the first time that, it stinks. And it's more you feel bad for DeMarcus Cousins than you do how it affects the team in a lot of ways. Because Cousins had waited his entire career to get to a playoff game.
Yeah.
He hadn't played in a playoff game before Game 1. And then in game two, in the first few minutes of game two, and he's got a chance to be a strong contributor on a team that could win an NBA title, and he goes down with what appears to be a season-ending injury, and you just feel miserable for him.
What is going on with the Raiders? Like, why did they end up sending those guys home, and essentially, I guess, the draft war room is going to be two guys?
Is there anything more Raiders than that?
I mean,
you want to talk about dysfunction at its highest levels.
Yeah.
That's the Oakland Raiders.
We don't trust our scouts. Then why pay them? Then fire them.
That's a good question. And we'll see what happens after the draft.
Yeah.
And make no mistake, yes, Mike Mayock is the GM and will have strong influence. Gruden's calling the shots.
Yeah.
And Gruden is the one making the decisions. When they draft at four, it's John Gruden's pick. And when they take the other two picks in the first round, assuming they don't make any trades, it's going to be John Gruden that's making these decisions. So I think there's some angst because some of the scouts were left over. Reggie McKenzie was let go. And it's a completely different organization now with John Gruden essentially in charge of everything. I mean, even whatever Gruden wants, he gets. And Mark Davis bows down to John Gruden. So this is all Gruden, and he's controlling, and he's trying to, I guess, that he doesn't trust a lot of those people, thinks they have ulterior motives, and this way he guarantees there's going to be no leaks, is what we're hearing coming out of Raider headquarters in Alameda. So, but, I mean, how Raiders is this? It really is.
Great.
I mean, nothing from that organization will surprise anybody, I don't think.
That's great. Absolutely. Is it a lot of talk about Kyler Murray going number one. Is it Bosa at number two for the 49ers?
That's what it sounds like. And I think that the 49ers, they're in desperate need of people that can get to the pass rush and get to the quarterback. Because the Niners, that's one area they've struggled. They've tried, and they drafted some defensive linemen the last few years. And Solomon Thomas so far has not worked out, who was taken a couple of years ago, number three from Stanford. They thought he's a guy that could get to the quarterback, and that's not really his M.O. He's a versatile defensive lineman that can do some things for you up front, but he's not that pin your ears back, get to the pass rush.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they did trade for Dee Ford, and they got him from Kansas City, but if Bosa's on the board there, too, which, by all appearances, that's the way it's going to go.
Mm-hmm.
I'd be surprised if the Niners didn't go in that direction because, look, in this day and age in the NFL, defensively, what are you thinking about? You're thinking about a corner that can defend. You're thinking about maybe a nickel corner who can cover the guy in the slot and a defensive lineman that can get to the quarterback, and that's what Bosa is.
Last but not least, and I don't know how much this will have an impact. It might be zero. The answer might just be zero, so you can be as brief as possible. But how much do you think the 49ers are weighing? Not necessarily Bosa's political views. That's, you know, everybody has their own views, and they've got the right to it. It's mainly the social media posts criticizing not only the city of San Francisco, but the culture of San Francisco. Do you think that plays in at all in trying to figure out who's going to be the best football player for a team?
I think it has to. Now, look, the talent's going to speak for himself, but it's not like he's committed a crime.
Right, absolutely.
He's just, you know, made some political statements that I think will be unattractive to the fan.
And you know what? And he can say, I was totally ignorant to San Francisco. I had no idea what I was talking about. And now I'm here, and this is great.
Yeah, and that's probably, if the Niners take him at two, that's probably what you're going to hear.
Absolutely.
But at the end of the day, I think the Niners have to look at it. Who's the best fit for a football team? Who's the best player on the board? And if Nick Bosa is the best player on the board, you draft him, and then you deal with those comments and those social media posts because you have to do what's in the best interest of your football team. And if that's the case, then you'll deal with it and do damage control after the fact.
Roxy Bernstein, 95.7 The Game, the Pac-12 Network, and ESPN Radio as well there in the Bay Area with all the information. Roxy, as always, you're the best, man. Very much appreciate the time, brother.
You got it, Jason. Anytime.
LA, Hollywood, and the Sunset Strip.
We do head to LA. We find our man Pete Fox, 95.5 KLOS and NBC Sports Radio. Pete, how are you, sir?
All is well.
Clippers could not find a way to win one of the other games after the big comeback. They do have a game five on Wednesday night. Is it just academic at this point? And if so, what's the takeaway from this opening round series in which they at least got one game against the Warriors?
Yeah, it feels like it's in the books for the Warriors at this point. Even when Steph Curry has an off night, you know, they've just got so much firepower there. Durant, Thompson step up with big games to cover for Steph. So, you know, but I think all in all for the Clippers, they have proven to be worthy of a team as good as the Warriors when they've got, for the most part, no stars. And, you know, basically what they've kind of done at this point is painted a picture for the potential free agents as to what they would be walking into, which is a bunch of young talent and a team that fights really hard, that, you know, appears to have a good system in place under a variety of different people. I guess the biggest name would be Jerry West atop that list, even though he's merely a consultant in this whole thing. So it feels like they have done their job, even in a loss in this series.
How big of players do you think they will be with all of the big free agents this offseason?
They're going to, yes, as big as they can be. I mean, they're going to go after Kawhi. There's still a lot of talk, rumblings, rumors that, you know, he is interested in leaving Toronto and coming to L.A. I mean, it's been thrown out there for a couple of years now that coming to L.A. is something he's interested in, but it doesn't mean the Lakers. So I feel like the Kawhi play for the Clippers is probably atop their list.
Okay, so the Lakers, does it matter who they bring in as head coach? Monty Williams, Ty Lue, does that really matter at the end of the day?
You know, maybe a little bit, but not much. Those two guys are fairly interchangeable at this point. They both work well with LeBron. You know, they're kind of LeBron approved. They've gotten the stamp of approval from him with regard to that. So I don't know what they're waiting on at this point. It doesn't feel like there's another candidate out there. What it seems like, it feels like, is that they're waiting to make the president of basketball operations decision, which is logical. That would make sense. You hire the president, then you hire the coach. So I think that's why we're all a little bit surprised that they haven't gone out and hired Ty Lue or Monty Williams yet, because that makes no sense. And that's pretty much what the Lakers have done recently when it comes to move, is do things that make absolutely no sense. So, yeah, it feels like it's going to be one of those two guys. The Juwan Howard option seems like a distant third, but another guy that LeBron would be cool with.
Didn't they already hire LeBron? I mean, that just, they've already got that in place. Now they
that first step is taking place.
Do you think it's going to end up as one of those two, Monty Williams or Ty Lue? I know Mark Jackson's name. You mentioned Juwan Howard. A lot of names have been thrown around, but do you think it's between those two, Ty Lue and Monty Williams?
Yeah, well, it feels like Ty Lue is the head and shoulders favorite in this race, mainly because of this blindedness that the Lakers have for people that have Lakers ties, the quote family, as it's called around here in L.A. So Ty Lue has that connection. It's not a deep one, but he did play for the team and he coached for the team. So from that aspect, when you couple in the LeBron aspect of things, it feels like he is rooted deeper in the Laker organization than any of the other guys that are in the running.
All right, on the college basketball front, Mick Cronin officially hired. Last time we talked, they were just going through different number of candidates. But Mick Cronin, as the head coach there for UCLA, he spells win, F-U-N. What's the spelling of the reaction with UCLA fans with Mick Cronin?
You know, it has been like, okay, well, that's fine. You know, very lukewarm, milquetoast. You know, I don't think anybody's really upset. I also don't feel like it's a situation where people are going, what? Why that guy? You know, I mean, he's got a fairly good track record. And when you hear about all the other guys that they went after that were turned down or that turned it down for one reason or the other, I mean, mainly the reason that these other guys Jamie Dixon didn't get the job or take the job is because of the buyout that was involved in their contract and that UCLA wasn't willing to pay it. So that's kind of what it boiled down to. And I think the fans were willing to accept that. Okay, it makes sense. We would have rather had Jamie Dixon, but we got Cronin instead because it just seemed to work out. So I think it's just a selection as head coach where everyone's like, all right, well, let's see what happens with this one because it couldn't be much worse. And I don't think there was a lot of other options available to them.
Yeah. I think I got that backwards. I think he said he spells fun, W-I-N. Either way, it was a question about his style of play might be boring. Why spell fun, W-I-N? All right, well, we'll see.
I showed you how big a story that was. We didn't even hear that, really. I mean, kudos to you for finding that.
Oh, well, you know, we like college basketball around here. All right, Reggie Bush, obviously one of the bigger names in USC history, has been disassociated with the NCAA. I guess I didn't even realize it was like a lifetime disassociation for Reggie Bush, and now he's going to be a commentator for Fox Sports, and there's like this question about what's going to happen if he has a USC game. Is he even allowed back on campus? What do you think, or I guess what is, if any, talk from USC, and is there any chance that the NCAA will go back and be like, all right, it's been a while. Right, you can stop being disassociated. Chris Webber can be allowed back. Bruce Pearl is going to a Final Four when he was got a 5-year show cause. Okay, Reggie, you can go back and be a part of the university again.
Yeah, you know, it is interesting when you look at the Chris Webber story with regard to how bad that infraction was. And I think this, whenever this conversation, this topic of Reggie Bush and USC comes up, it always angers USC fans because you can reel off 3 or 4 or more stories about guys that got into considerably more trouble. And the infraction to the university was nowhere near as devastating as it was to USC. And I think the big part of that was mainly because the NCAA, which is also known around here as a clown college, really boils down to the fact that they didn't like Mike Garrett. They really disliked Mike Garrett. And so much so that they dropped the hammer on USC in such a heavy-handed way that they went through a lot. I mean, even though the infractions were just like 4 years, I was covering them day-to-day during that time. I mean, the reduced scholarships went on for years past the infraction from the NCAA. So they dropped the hammer on them in a very big way. And when you think about it, it's fairly ridiculous because this was not even Reggie Bush. This was Reggie Bush's stepfather who got a rented house. So, there's just clearly a bias against USC. And it's hard not to when you're, not in the neighborhood. And even when you're around here, there are a lot of USC fans, but you look at things they're going through even now with these admission scandals.
Yeah.
They do a lot of things that are embarrassing and make themselves look like, yeah, we're better than everyone else, right? So they're easy to hate. I get it. But at the same time, the NCAA is supposed to be, unbiased about all of their universities, and they're clearly not. So you would like to think that they would do the right thing here. Reggie Bush has served his penalty, so to speak, and at the very minimum, I have to admit, I was at a Rams game, and he was there working for the NFL Network, and it seemed weird. Whoa, he's at the Coliseum,
Oh, yeah,
right. Bizarre. So the fact that, he can't even go on the campus or around the school working for another company seems completely ridiculous and preposterous. So you'd like to think that the NCAA would pull their head out with regard to this and at least make a reasonable decision.
We'll see if that ever happens with the NCAA. Pete Fox, 95.5 KLOS and NBC there in LA. Pete, as always, you're the man. Very much appreciate the time, brother.
Thanks, man. Talk to you later.
All right, there's a full court press on this Monday edition of the show. We continue rolling along, heading up until 6 o'clock. Certainly talking a lot of the local sports. Thank you to those guests there with the national side of the conversation as well. The fitness side of the conversation takes place at the Fitness Market. That's where those here at ESPN Louisville ended up purchasing their piece of fitness equipment. I got the Precor treadmill. Andy's got a treadmill. Drew Diener's got an elliptical and a treadmill. Nathan Huber's got a treadmill. Crumbs Revenge has a piece of equipment from the Fitness Market as well, because Chris and Pat Wider, their local guys, been in business 19 years with the Treadmill Medic. Great to work with, easy to work with. Explain everything that you could possibly want to know about all of the brands, all of the different pieces of equipment, why they're valued at the certain spot they are, why the brands are viewed and trusted the way that they are. And that is at the Fitness Market. They take care of the locals. They're local guys, and we certainly appreciate and love working with them. Again, I've got the Precor treadmill. Drew's got an elliptical and a treadmill, but they've got bikes and e-bikes, and they've got home gyms and weights and anything that you could look for if you are looking outside and seeing that it's getting warmer. and pool season right around the corner. If you don't look or feel like you want to look or feel, the Fitness Market is the spot for you. Two great locations inside the Snyder on Westport Road, or the Superstore on Watterson Trail and Plantside Drive at the corner, or online at thefitnessmarket.com. We will take a timeout, come back, continue rolling on this Monday. It's ESPN 680, 105.7 WHBE.
All the latest news from the people who are there. The Full Court Press on Kentuckiana's ESPN 680.